the worst moments of our life.
Hey, girl, hey, that's bad.
So speaking of, like, worst ever experiences.
That is the worst ever.
I don't feel so good.
And that was my worst audition ever.
How bad can it be?
And we feel the pain is best or funny. Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast.
Welcome.
I'm your host, Christine Lakin.
I'm your host, Alaa Khaled.
And we are solo showing it today.
I guess.
Oh, my God. I have some things that I've wanted to get down and dirty with Alaa. And I feel like he's been kind of holding out on me and you, the viewers, listeners.
The viewers?
Yeah. they view us on the social, and then they listen to us with their ear holes.
Okay.
You know, it's a social experience these days.
They're not viewers, though.
Okay. Well, the listeners and the fans.
Okay.
How about that?
That's better.
All right. I want to put you in the hot seat for a minute.
Please.
Please. So let's start from the beginning.
All right. I was born in Peru.
Interesting.
Well, it's interesting because my parents are Palestinian.
Yes.
And they got married and had friends in Peru. So they went and spent their honeymoon there and they liked it. And then my mom got pregnant while she was there.
What?
Yeah, they only lived there for a year. And then so she got pregnant while we were there, had me, and then 15 days after I was born, came to the United States.
Hold on. Let me go back. They're living in Palestine.
Yes.
Which is what you call it.
Right. It's also known as Israel.
Okay. So for those of you who need a little history lesson, yeah. Some people call it Palestine. Some people call it Israel. We've been debating this. People have been debating this for a very long time. It's what a lot of wars are and turmoil is made up of. Alaa calls it Palestine. They left there. So they had a house there and they just left for like a honeymoon and it turned into like a year?
Well, yeah, they left there. See, what happens, my dad is one of six brothers.
Okay.
So their ultimate goal was to get to the United States. So what they would do is, my dad was the second youngest of the brothers. So when they went to Peru, they had friends there and they just sort of like, you know,
Hung out
and worked, made a living,
right,
but knowing that eventually they were going to end up in the United States.
I see. Okay, gotcha.
So each brother...
This wasn't like, we're going to the Atlantis. Oh, shit, I'm pregnant. Now we have to stay in the Bahamas.
No. It was
okay,
eventually
right,
to get to the United States. My oldest uncle came first to the United States. He made enough money to bring the second brother. Then they worked together, made enough money to bring the third brother. So at that point, when they had me, it was my dad's turn.
I understand. So you are 15 days old.
15 days old.
And they stick you on a plane.
Stick me on a plane.
And you go where?
We go to, if I remember correctly, I think it's like Mobile or Cocoa Beach. Mobile, Alabama or Cocoa Beach. I can't remember which was first.
Okay.
But I think it was Cocoa Beach.
Florida.
Yeah.
And you are the oldest child.
I am the oldest of three.
Of three. So what business were they in? Like, what was he doing?
They didn't really have a business. They sort of like, my uncle started like in the clothing haberdashery stuff, like selling shit out of like
trunks,
the back of a car.
Okay.
Yeah, literally.
Did you ever sell hammer pants?
No, it was way, hammer pants came way, well, this is 1972, by the
no,
way.
No, I was just wondering because in like 1993, one style came out to Venice Beach and bought hammer pants out of the back of a van, which I know sounds kind of like
at that
to catch
point,
a predator.
They were millionaires.
He was selling something.
So no, in 72, and then we moved to New Orleans because we sort of moved like a tribe, like wherever the family went. So I grew up with all my cousins. I grew up with all my uncles and aunts. We always lived in the same city,
but not in the same house necessarily.
Not in the same house. Okay. So we moved to New Orleans and my dad, would sell like Sassoon jeans out of a trunk.
Yeah.
And then
Sassoon was kind of like a Z Cavaricci.
Sassoon was like the denim for at that.
Guess. It was like the guess of that time.
So he made enough money to open a store in a shopping center in New Orleans. And the store was called, I'll never forget it, Mr. Man. Yeah. So they had this store, and then my mom opened a store two doors down called Ms. and His.
Oh my God, I love this. So good.
So they made enough money so that we lived there for about 3 or 4 years.
And you're how old at this point?
I'm a toddler.
Okay.
I'm young. My brother, Khaled, was born in New Orleans.
Okay. And he's how many, you guys are how many years apart?
3 years apart.
Got it.
So so it was me and my brother and the small house in Gretna, Louisiana. I still know the address. I won't say it on the air, but okay. It's on a street called Green Oak Drive. I actually went there this year.
I was going to ask if you've been back.
I went there because it was my brother's. I was there for Thanksgiving, and I went. It was my brother was born on like that Thanksgiving week. He was born November 26th, so sometimes it falls on right. Thanksgiving Day. So for his birthday, I went to the old house where he first lived in and took a picture of me in front of the house.
Oh, cute!
Yeah.
Do you remember that house? Is it vivid in your
yeah,
mind?
Oh, yeah. I'll always remember the house. Yeah. Oh, it's like the first memory I have.
It's so weird. Whatever
I remember
that
the
first
address,
memory house is.
I remember, I mean,
yeah.
I just, everything about it. I remember my little daycare that was like two blocks down called Mrs. K's. Yeah. I mean, it's still there. It's all still there.
Wow.
So we lived in New Orleans for several years, and my dad would always try to upgrade our lifestyle. So mm-hmm. wherever the business was, he wanted to move to.
Right.
So every 3 or 4 years, we'd move.
Okay.
Literally, it was 3 to 4 years, and we'd move. And it wasn't just like moving to like a city nearby. It was like a whole other state. So we lived in Cocoa Beach, New Orleans, three cities in Dallas, Greensboro, North Carolina, St. Petersburg, Florida, Orlando, Florida.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, it was a whole thing. So
that's a lot.
So me, my brother, and then eventually my sister, who was born in Dallas, we sort of became chameleons because we had to fit in to new schools.
Right.
We had to adjust our you know, because it wasn't just like the same region.
Right.
It was like totally different states.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Very different.
Of course.
From each other. So it was difficult, but like I don't know how we managed. I'm surprised that I'm not
more fucked up than you already are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because I was always like the little puny one.
You were very tiny.
I was tiny.
You were like a late bloomer. I've seen pictures.
I was a very late bloomer.
When did you go through puberty?
My senior year of high school.
It's crazy.
I was 5'1" the beginning of my senior year.
Oh my God.
5'1".
You're like the runt of the class.
Uh-huh. And then by the end of my senior year, I was 5'9". And then when my first year of college, I was 5'11".
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Painful.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you go through growing pains?
The most painful experience I ever had in my life. Like I know it sounds crazy, but my nipples, like I couldn't wear like Izod shirts and stuff because they would rub, my nipples were sore. I literally was like, my voice changed like within, I was a music person,
right.
So I was in like all the choral groups, and I was in this jazz ensemble with Wayne Brady.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So it was called Premiere.
In high school.
We went to Dr. Phillips High School. And so I was going to be a music major, and I got accepted to Rollins College in Winter Park. They have this countertenor program because my voice hadn't changed when I auditioned for it. So I was singing like alto soprano, like easily.
Right.
The middle of that year, my voice started changing. I could barely sing anything.
Right.
It was fucking nuts.
And were you thinking to yourself, oh my God, I've just screwed.
Well, I screwed myself. There was no way I was going to get in the program. It's a countertenor program. So luckily, my sophomore year of high school, I'll go back a little bit. My sophomore year of high school is where I got exposed to theater.
Yeah.
So my sophomore year of high school, I auditioned for the musical Oklahoma.
Okay.
And
Sorry with a Fringe. Sorry yes. with a Fringe.
And I auditioned for Ally Hackum.
Mm-hmm.
And my best friend in high school, David Nickel, got the role. So I was just ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
He had to drop out, and so they said, you're going to be Ally Hackum. Well, I knew nothing about theater. I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, okay, you know.
Right.
I was learning lines. I was like, whatever. But there was something about that opening night.
Yeah.
That, like, I transformed.
That was like the bug bit you then.
Like, I stole the show.
Okay.
So, Wayne Brady's playing Judd.
Oh, my God.
I'm playing Allie Hackam. I literally steal the show. I'll always remember my director and acting teacher, Karen Ruggiero, ran after the opening night and came and just grabbed me and gave me the biggest kiss and hug. And she's like, I can't believe what just came out of you. Because, like, I literally...
Nobody had seen that till opening night.
Because I didn't know what I was doing. But right. it was the improv skill right, that I right. like, naturally had.
Because you'd been doing it your whole life to fit in.
To fit in. So I literally, like, when I saw how the audience was reacting to certain things, I was like, okay, now I know what works and what doesn't.
And for those of people that don't know Oklahoma, what is that character like? Give me like a flavor, a slice.
So Allie Hackam, I don't know, this is like over 20 years.
Yeah, fine. Okay.
So Allie Hackam is like this, he's like a scam artist. He's right. like, he goes around trying to like.
So you're 5'1", and you weigh probably 95 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
And you're in a sophomore and you're like, hey, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like that guy.
Yeah. And people thought it was hilarious.
Oh, it was genius. Then my senior year, we did, and the reason why we did it was she cast the show around the seniors that she thought would be the stars of the show.
Sure.
And the show was Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay.
And I was cast to play Seymour.
Oh,
which
okay.
Was like,
yeah.
And we won every award in all state that year with the show. I mean, we just did everything. The,
right.
The school that I go that I went to is it's a magnet now. It's a performing arts magnet,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of the best schools in the country for performing arts. We had Wayne Brady, we had Joey Fatone, we had a lot of celebrities came out of the school
right.
just out of high school. Plus, we were right across from Universal Studios.
Right.
So we had a lot of perks through them, you know,
sure.
sets and stuff like that. So it was good.
Did you ever compete in high school? You were in choir and show choir and things like
mm-hmm.
that. Did you ever compete and go down, you know, to Orlando and they would do those like,
oh.
show choir competitions?
Oh, we did every all-state competition possible.
So did I.
Yeah. Well, we won every single one of them.
So did we.
Okay, well.
We were in different years.
Yeah.
I was at least 10 years younger.
They're still winning.
So it's fine.
They're still winning. You should look them up, Dr. Phillips High School.
No, but those things are crazy. Can we talk about that for a second?
Well, I'll remember one of them where it was in Tampa. It was an all-state theater competition. And the
they're nerdy competitions. Don't get me wrong.
No, but we protested one of them.
What?
Oh, it was crazy because we were all theater, you know, actors,
yeah.
you know? Because at that point, I was like, oh, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah.
And so the whole theme of the opening of the whole Allstate thing was parodies of musicals. Like, they wrote this whole musical.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're like, Thespis never sang. So we were pissed off. And our section was hair. And so we were like, let's protest the show.
Oh, God.
So literally, all these other high schools are like doing all their stuff. And we're pretending to rehearse with them. And then when the show came in front of a live audience... We literally had totally different signs. Thespis never sang. We changed all the lyrics. And you would see every school, like the directors, and they're all like they're going to kill us. They're in the wings, like ready to attack us. We had a plan, like we're going to perform the closing thing, and then we're going to fucking run to the buses and get the hell out of Dodge.
Shut up.
Swear to God. So we did this whole thing in front of, and people are roaring and standing up and blah, blah, blah. And you just see a line of kids just like going, you know, arms crossed and ready to beat the shit out of us.
Oh, my God.
So we literally, after our thing was done, they're like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Da, 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 da. We literally ran. We ran up to our buses and drove back to Orlando.
Oh,
it was
my God.
So much fun, though. We were like,
they were crazy. I mean, I wasn't allowed. I couldn't compete in sports because I was always acting and stuff. But I could compete in show choir because I was back in Atlanta the time that happened, which was usually like the spring. When I say it was nerdy, I mean in the best sense. Like, it was all about music. It was all about harmony. It was like, you know, we were rehearsing for months and months and months, our three or four songs, and most of them were some kind of, you know, songs in Latin. And I mean, it was, you know, the Hallelujah chorus. It was things like that. But we would get so into it because we were like, when you're singing with a chorus or like a group or you're singing with a jazz band, you get so musically kind of like attuned that you're like, you become like a perfectionist about it. And so we would go down to compete, and we'd go down to, you know, Orlando, take the buses down. Like, we would do our whole competition. We had to wear these ugly ass dresses. They were disgusting. They were like taffeta. They had to be T-length, which, by the way, T-length is the worst length.
T-length is the standard length for choirs.
It's horrible. It literally, it's the worst
length
ever. We had
tuxes, cummerbunds.
Yes, and it's 107 degrees in Orlando, yeah, and you're sweating your ass off.
But that's, remember the shit story with Jody I told you?
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the choir.
Oh, right, exactly.
That's one of the choir festivals.
But then the difference was, I went to this stupid like prep school in Atlanta, so we would go down to this thing, and then after the competition, where we were all being totally nerdy and buttoned up, it became a complete free-for-all at the hotels, and kids were getting bottles of liquor. There were like rumors that kids were getting wasted in hotel rooms. At 1 year, two juniors were expelled they found a handle of vodka, and people were going crazy.
Well, my sophomore year, we went to
choir gone crazy. Like, who would have thunk it?
My sophomore year, we went to London to sing for the BBC.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay, you might have been better than
okay,
us.
Okay, so we went to London, and that's where I first had my first drink and my first cigarette. I was smoking in the back of the plane.
What?
Yeah, because you could smoke on the plane at that time. This was like 1987. So you could still smoke.
My jaw's on the floor.
So we literally, a group of us...
What are you going to say, Stephen?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say that was the year I was born.
Well, whatever.
Fuck
off, Stephen.
I want to vomit.
Yeah, so... we were smoking. That's when I first had my first cigarettes,
oh
my first
God.
Alcohol, anything.
That's crazy.
So here's just, I come from very strict Muslim parents.
Right.
We owned a store in the Florida Mall called Park Avenue in Orlando.
Of course.
I jumped to, like, now I'm in high school.
Yep.
I worked for the competition. I told you guys with Jody's episode
right.
at Merry-Go-Round.
Right.
And then I went to Rollins College my first semester of college in Winter Park. And I wasn't really doing much there, but I was just taking regular classes. But I was so...
So you didn't... But that was where you got the... You were going to try to go to
That's
school.
Where I was doing music. But
right,
I was
music.
Like, I'm just going to go to school
okay.
and figure it out what I'm going to do because I don't okay. know how... But I knew I wanted to be an actor. So my director was like, oh, I'm taking the seniors this year to New York to audition for AMDA.
Right.
And I said, I want to go. She was like, you do? And I was like, yeah. But I couldn't tell my parents because in tradition, you don't leave your family.
Right.
You work with your family. You stay in the home until you're married and have kids. It's like, and you still try to stay close. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just traditions. And none of my cousins ever went away to college. They all went to college in the same city. And so I told my parents that I was going to go as a chaperone to the Bahamas.
What?
For their senior class trip. So like, okay, but Bahamas is like an hour away.
Right.
And it's like, we used to go there as kids all the time because it's like a two-day trip or whatever.
Right.
It's very easy to get to from Florida. So, but I was flying to New York to audition for college.
Oh my God, scandalous.
So I went, I did.
They didn't check your tickets? They were just like, oh, great, he's going great.
No, they just gave me money. They're like, okay, buy the tickets, da-da-da-da. You know, it was like
okay.
that cash. My mom used to like, my friends would come to the store to say hi to me,
mm-hmm.
my mom's store, and literally she's like, oh, honey, he's not here, but here, clink, and she opened the register. She's like, here's 20, go have lunch. That's what my mom would do. Like,
oh
it was like,
God.
Oh, and my dad was the total opposite. My dad was like, he looked like a mafia. He always drove a Cadillac. Tinted windows.
I've met your dad.
Smokes with windows closed, right? He used to have these big, giant, like, Ray-Ban shades with diamonds
oh
on the end
God.
Of it, right? He would park in the no parking zone in front of the school to pick me up while I was rehearsing for some theater show because it was on his time.
Right.
And he literally would roll the window halfway down. Smoke would be billowing out the window.
Oh my
He'd
God.
Point to any kid he could see and he'd say, come here. And like some fucking
stranger danger
and then like go get a la and that's all he would say and the kid this campus is huge. They used to call it Gucci High, but it's Dr. Phillips High School. So the kid would be running around the school looking for me,
freaking out.
Your dad wants you. You got to come now. And I go, oh, tell him I'll be there after rehearsal. Just tell him to hang out. And they're like, I'm not telling him that. And I'm like, so I'd march out.
It's going to be like a decapitated horse's head.
Right. So I'd march out. I'm like, Dad, don't embarrass me. Like, I'll be out when I'm done. He's like, hurry up. And that was it. Like, so I'd come in, he'd be like, take me home, you know, after school, or take me to the mall.
That's so
and
funny.
That's it. But that's every day. He'd like park in a no parking zone. No one would say a word to him.
Because everyone was like completely afraid of him, of course.
And my mom is the complete opposite. Hey, honey, how are you? You look great. Here's $20. You know, don't worry. So it's my senior year of high school. So now it's my first semester of college, and they're going to New York. I fly to New York and I audition for AMDA.
What were the criteria for your audition?
So I had to do a song and a monologue.
Okay.
And
what'd
I did
you do?
I did a song from Little Shop, and it was Grow For Me.
Mm-hmm.
And then my monologue was Festa from Twelfth Night.
Okay. Wow. Highbrow.
Yeah. So I audition Valentine's Day. I get a call from the school that I got accepted for the next semester.
And now you're excited, but you're also like, fuck.
Freaking out.
How am I going to explain this?
So I go to my parents and I said, I waited a couple days and I said, I didn't go to Bahamas. I went to New York and I auditioned for...
So lie number one.
Yeah, I auditioned for this school in New York and I got in and I want to go. And my dad literally turned red and he started screaming. He's like, you're not going nowhere. You're not leaving. Da, da, da. And my mom's crying.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I'm going to go. And I finally looked at him. I said, listen, either you're going to help me go and pay for it or I'll figure it out. If I have to live on the streets, I'm going. So I wasn't going to the fall. So I had a full like winter and summer to like get things going and stuff. And we moved to a bigger house, like maybe like a mile away. And my brother, Khaled, starts getting involved in music.
Right. We're gonna talk about that in a minute.
So now they have this actor, right? Who's like now he's moving to New York. And now my dad, for my brother's 15th birthday, buys him turntables.
Right.
And an Akai like drum machine.
So like the two boys who are supposed to be taking over the clothing stores
we're not doing it. So we're complete black sheeps of the family. Like no one gets it.
Yeah.
My family had to have like a meeting with all my uncles and stuff of why I was moving to New York. Like, what happened? What's wrong? And I'm like, nothing's wrong. I just want to go to college.
Right.
And I want to go to the school that I want to go to. So, but it was just a strange thing for like, why is he leaving his parents? You know, it was a huge thing.
So like with all your other cousins, you're not the oldest of all the cousins.
No.
So with the cousins who were older this time, none of them had done this.
They went to school wherever cities.
And then they're all taking over the businesses of, you know, the clothing stores or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
So Khaled's now like practicing spinning, DJing, and he's 15. And then he starts working for the Orlando Magic as a ball boy.
Okay.
So Shaq, it's like Shaq's first season on the Magic.
Right.
And all the players used to shop at my parents' store.
Oh, you're kidding.
So that's how he got the ball boy job.
Because they had like big and tall?
No, because my mom could look at you. So Shaq would have to buy two suits of the same suits and my mom would put them together so they would fit him.
No way.
But he never had to try anything on. So that's why they loved my mom. Because my mom could literally look at you and go, okay, you're a 16 and a half neck, 34, 35 sleeve, 34 waist, 33 inseam, 42 jacket.
So she could just look at you,
literally
look at the measurements,
be like,
pick out your fabric, and
that's what she would do. And so And for men who shop, women like to try things on.
Right.
Men don't.
Right.
They find something they like, they'll buy like four of them in different colors.
I know. I am married, so I get that.
All right.
That.
Well, I don't know if he shops.
He doesn't enjoy, you know, he finds something that works, and yes, he buys three
of them. So this is when the mom and pop shops were big.
Got it. You know,
so, and my parents had a knack. They were famous in Orlando for their clothing store.
Right.
So Khaled asked my dad for $5,000 to throw a teen night in Orlando because there was no teen clubs for all the teenagers to go to. And my dad was like, you're crazy. I'm not giving you any money to. So he asked my cousin who was living in Orlando. He's like, dude, give me $5,000. I'll pay you back that night. I know I'm going to make money off of this. So he gave him the money, mm-hmm. and he rented out the Holiday Inn banquet hall on International Drive. And he charged like the boys like $10 and the girls got in free.
Right.
And he went to like Sam's Club and bought like Pepsis and stuff. He hired a security guard with the money.
It's so smart.
And
he
walked out of there with like $15,000 to $20,000.
Oh my God.
That next week, he's like, I'm dropping out of high school.
At six, like 16, 15, 16.
Yeah, like his freshman year. Because he knew there was like, he's like, I can make money in this business.
Yeah. And he was mixing all the music. He was DJing.
He was DJing, but he wasn't even that good. He was just starting out.
He was just playing songs.
Just playing songs. And
hold on. Just for those of you who are listening, I just want to tell you tell everybody who your brother is.
Okay, so my brother, I was going to get there, but he is DJ Khaled.
So just so you understand where the story is going, yeah.
Right.
This is like where it started.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
continue.
So I'm now in New York. Khaled's like doing DJing and stuff.
Right.
And we had a pretty great lifestyle. Like we lived in a gated community. We each had brand new BMWs.
This is talking about when you got to high school in Orlando.
Yeah, like we're in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
We were like at the height of like financially, like we were exactly where my parents wanted to be.
Had kept trading up for.
But just so you know, my dad's intentions moving to the United States was to make enough money to move back to Palestine.
Got it.
We built a huge house in Palestine. Eventually, that's what he wanted. But my dad got so caught up in the American
way of life
that we'd go overseas more than he would.
Right. Interesting.
So we didn't end up going. We were always afraid, like, we're going to end up moving back to, in Arabic, we say the blad, which is like the country.
Uh-huh.
So we're like, we're going to end up moving back there, but it never happened, thank God. So I'm in New York, and it's my second semester.
Wait. Let me go back for a second. How did you get your dad on board? Like, eventually, was he supportive of this when you eventually left? Or was he like, screw you, you're going to be figured out on your own? I mean, you had a while to kind of get him on board.
I had a while to get him on board, and my dad's biggest mistake he ever made was when he had the clothing stores, he made the mistake of taking me my sophomore year, my first trip to New York for a trade show to order merchandise.
Sure.
And I literally, when we got into the city from LaGuardia, I remember exactly where I was. The Marriott Marquis. I looked at my father and I said, you made the biggest mistake of your life. And he's like, why? And I go, because I'm going to end up living here one day.
Yeah.
I just knew it. I was like, this is for me.
Yeah.
Like, this is exactly what I want.
Yeah.
Cut to now he's accepted me. The first time I ever saw my dad cry was when he put me on the plane to go to New York.
When he drove you to the airport.
Yeah. That's the first time I ever seen my father cry.
Wow.
Yeah. He's very stern and strong.
Sure.
And just never seen him cry. And then we had so much money, right? So they gave me a credit card. And I'm literally like taking people to Tavern on the Green. I'm like spending like thousands of dollars like the first month I'm there.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm like, my mom would ship, my mom would FedEx me like cash. Because it wasn't because there wasn't like ATMs and that, you know, it's like, it wasn't like that kind of society yet,
uh-huh.
where money was easy. So I had like an American Express. And I remember my dad flew up like a month later without telling me to New York. He knocked on my door. He said, give me your card. He cut it, and then he left.
Uh-uh.
Swear.
He literally flew up just to cut your card.
Yeah, because I had no concept of money.
Right.
I had no, I didn't know what, you know, it was
anything
just,
really cost.
No, we never, you know, we were sort of, my dad would always say to us, we work for you.
I see. Okay.
I mean, that's just how
sure,
we grew up.
I get it.
So, yeah, we were spoiled rotten. So I'm in New York and I remember it was nighttime and I get a phone call from my friend Meredith and she said, are your parents okay? And I said, what are you talking about? And she's living in Gainesville. She's going to University of Florida.
Yeah.
And I go, what are you talking about? She goes, I'm hearing my friend who lives down the street from you says there's been a robbery. I want to make sure your parents are okay. And I go,
oh, no.
She's not even there.
Oh, no.
So I'm freaking, I go, I got to get off the phone. I call my parents, the house, and no one's answering. It's just, there's no answer whatsoever. There's no cell phones at that time. Like, we didn't have cell phones at that time. So I couldn't get in touch with anyone.
Right.
So I called a friend to go over there, and I was like, please go with my parents. And sure enough, they were home invaded. They cut all the wires to the phones. They threw my sister down the stairs. They punched my father, stuck a gun in his mouth.
Oh my God.
And then one of the guys took his mask off when he was getting ready to pull the trigger and said, you said we weren't killing anyone. And so
that's what
that's what he told the other robber. There was three of them.
Oh.
So they just tied him up, put him in the closet, and this robbed everything. My mom had diamonds and opals on every finger. What had happened was they had been scoping out
casing
owners of private businesses who were foreign, and they were casing them for months. So they knew when my dad made deposits.
Right.
They knew when they came home.
Because you're carrying cash in
they're
a
carrying
bag
cash. So,
from the register.
So they would, and they'd see my mom with all her rings at the register blah, blah, blah. So they knew they had money. So they would watch them for like a couple months. And it was the weekend. It was Sunday. It was about 8 p.m. And my dad didn't take the deposits till Monday, from Friday to Monday. And when I say the store did a lot of money, it did a lot of money.
Right.
So they knew exactly what, it was the kind of neighborhood where you leave your garage open.
Right.
They literally walked in, robbed them. My brother happened to be DJing somewhere, so he wasn't home. Thank God, because he's such a... He would have probably tried to do something.
Yeah.
So because of that, it made like national news.
Oh my God.
And it's sort of just... They never recovered from that. And then they got audited by the IRS due to that, because of the amount of money that they claimed...
Right.
So we had seven stores in Florida,
mm-hmm.
but my dad only had one or two of them. The rest he gave to my uncles.
Got it.
To run, but it was like a chain. It was
at
that time there was a mall chain called DiBartolo.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the deal with DiBartolo is like you can open a store, but you eventually have to open in our other malls as part of the deal, as part of the contract. So we had to have like six stores in the state of Florida. So he'd just give them to my uncles. Well, my uncles weren't paying their taxes.
Oh, no.
So my dad's store, the one that was in the Florida Mall, was like the flagship store.
Right.
So they got audited. So they were audited for a year. Every day, IRS was in there doing receipts. And that store was doing $2 to $3 million a year. So they assumed that all the stores were doing that kind of money.
Right.
And it wasn't. So they lost everything.
Oh,
so they moved back to New Orleans. Khaled reluctantly went with them. I stayed in New York.
And he was still in high school at this time.
Yeah, but he had dropped out.
Right. Okay, right.
So he starts DJing in New Orleans.
Okay.
He works at a record store, and he's just learning music. Like, he's learning the hip-hop world.
Mm-hmm.
And he had nothing at that point. He had lost everything. So there was nothing. My parents opened a smaller store in a mall in New Orleans, but most of my family is in New Orleans, so when trouble happens, you go with where all your family is at.
Right.
So Khaled starts, you know, winning competition after competition. He starts DJing at the House of Blues, and then he says, "I'm moving to Miami." He didn't even have a car. He didn't have anything.
And like, he's how old at this point?
I think he's like, at this point, he's like 20, not even.
Right. So there was nothing your parents could say. But no, did they let him drop out of school?
I mean, in the Arab things, it's common for the boys to drop out of school. Like, you know what I mean? It's not, I mean,
the state didn't come after him. The state wasn't like, you have to go to school.
No, it wasn't like that then. Okay. And my dad, like, Khaled's a smart business person, right, but he's not book smart, right? So I was always like, I went to private school and the whole bit.
Right.
So Khaled decides he's going to move to Miami. He ends up moving to Miami. I moved to L.A.
Yeah.
He moves to Miami. I moved to L.A. And then he starts just pounding the pavement, like literally trying to like break down doors and get in this industry. So he ends up working for one of the first hip-hop stations in Miami and becomes a huge hit as a DJ there.
Right.
And Fat Joe,
mm-hmm,
sort of takes him under the wing.
And that was their first single. That was the big single.
Right. And so he becomes part of the Terror Squad.
Yeah.
Cut 2 years later, now he's right, DJ Khaled.
Right.
Right? It's fucked up.
Major key.
I mean, and
that's crazy.
But you know that whole thing was a phenomenon too with him because of the video that went viral on the jet ski.
Right.
He got lost on a jet ski.
Like Nicole Tom?
Yeah, but at night in the bay.
Oh.
Yeah, he literally got lost.
Wait, when was this? I don't know.
This was like maybe four or five years ago. He helped put Snapchat on the map.
Right. Yes.
When he snapped that video.
Because he was, God.
So, yeah. So, I end up moving to Los Angeles. He's in Miami. Yes. And I wasn't sort of part of that life. Like, my parents took the third car garage, I said, and made it into a music studio for him. And put a bed in there. It was like his own bedroom.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They totally took... We had a three-car garage, and then that one car, mm-hmm, whatever, they made into a full studio.
So he'd be up all hours of the night just doing things.
He had his own entrance.
And he's 17?
No, he's like 15.
Oh, my God. And he drops out of school.
He drops out.
Like, it's fine.
Freshman year. Yeah. Completely.
But, like, it's a double standard. Because with you, they would have never let you be like, if you were like, Mom and Dad, I want to be a dancer.
But I liked school.
Okay, but I'm just saying, if you were like, Mom and Dad, I'm going to go be a dancer, and I want to drop out of school and just go like act on the streets, they'd be like, no.
No, because they didn't think, well, first of all, they thought that there was a possibility that I would do that. Like, my brother was a mama's boy.
Okay.
So they never thought that he was going to leave, you know, let him do whatever he wants. He's always going to be with us. He'll take over the business at some point. They knew I was like...
You weren't sticking around to take over the business. So
no,
they were
like,
kind of like, okay.
I told you, when my dad took me to New York for the first time at 15... I literally looked at him in the cab and I said, you just made the biggest mistake of your life. I'm going to move here.
Right.
Like, I knew. It was like instinctually.
All bets were off with you.
Yeah, I was like, I'm moving here. He doesn't have that instinct. He doesn't have that, like independent. Or he does now.
Right.
Well, not really. He doesn't now because he's still codependent with everyone that's around him. His, mm-hmm, people, his crew... He has to have them with him.
He's an entourage.
Completely.
How deep is it?
It's pretty deep.
Like 20?
I have no idea the amount, but like there's a lot of people involved and they're very loyal to him and he's loyal to them.
Yep.
So, but that's how he runs. That's how he is. He has to have people around him at all times. I was never like that. I needed my space. I like doing, when my parents wanted me to come work for them in their business, I was like, nope, I'm moving, I'm working next door.
Right, right.
You know, I'm like, I'm doing it my way. This is how, I was very like, I'm doing it my way. You're not going to stop me.
Right.
And that's what happened. So after college in New York, I stayed for like, maybe like 6 months, 7 months. And it was like the summer. And heat in New York in the summer was...
So brutal.
Well, first of all, the spring I could hardly take because my allergies were so bad. You have to understand that I grew up in Florida and Louisiana.
So the pollen count is very minimal because it's green 9 months to 10 months out of the year.
Right.
In New York,
right.
It's green 3 months out of the year. So when it is green, it is you see pollen on the cars. It's
everywhere.
Horrible. And my eyes would be swollen shut. I was miserable. Plus, I was like, in a time period of New York, it was just like 93, 94. I went there in 91 mm-hmm. and I left there in 94. I was in New York at a time period where Broadway theater wasn't accepting for ethnic people. There wasn't when outside of the typical Asian, African American, and white. There was no place for me.
If you weren't doing The Lion King or Miss Saigon.
Which there was no Lion King. Miss Saigon, yes, there was.
Okay.
But there was none. This was a time period where it was all American. Broadway was all American. There was no space for me.
Okay.
Like I was like, even the auditions, I was like, I don't want to do this.
And you were stuffed up anyway. So what were you going to sing?
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I couldn't even breathe.
I'm stuffed up and
I can't see and my eyes are swollen and I'm like.
So you were like, fuck this. Yeah. Fuck this Broadway shit.
So the Mouseketeers that were shooting in Orlando were rapping. And they're like, we're moving to LA. So I said, I'm coming.
So let me ask you, when you were in school, did you had this, was your goal to do Broadway at that time? Or were you just like,
yes.
I love this and I'm just going to do whatever?
No, I thought I was going to do theater for sure.
And then after school, you were like, this is not my scene anymore.
I just didn't, there was no place for me. I didn't fit in.
Yeah.
There was nothing for me there.
And was that a shock to you after school?
No, because I, for some reason, I knew that I had to move on. Like, I knew, like,
this was my education. I needed this moment.
Right. And I'm glad I did it.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I feel like there's more.
Yeah.
So I moved to LA in 94. And the second night I was here was the Northridge earthquake.
What?
It was my second night. And I remember on the plane flying from, because I went to Florida first in Orlando, and I found a place in LA literally over like the phone, like area wise and stuff. And I.
Was this the place that you lived in?
It was
like
in
Studio City?
Yeah.
Was it the place by Warner Brothers?
This place was near on like where Vineland and
not the one I knew when we lived in that one.
Yeah,
got it.
No, that was Burbank. That was Toluca Lake. Yeah, the one you're talking about.
Yeah,
I'll get to that. So I'm leaving from Orlando. I shipped out my car to LA. So it was like,
what are you driving at the time?
I had a BMW.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah, I had a BMW. So I'm on the plane from Orlando to LA, and I was sitting by this nice lady from Woodland Hills.
Sure.
And we were just chit-chatting. I was like, yeah, I'm moving to LA. I've never, you know, I had been here with the party for a couple months. But that was like, literally didn't know the city at all.
You were living in like an apartment.
Right. And just being shuttled around by record people and be here at this time and that kind of, you know, that kind of thing. So I was just chit chatting with her. She was so nice. And she's like, oh, you're moving out. I was like, yeah, I'm going to move out there. I'm going to, you know, study acting and da 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 da. And I was like, the only thing I'm worried about is like, I've never been through an earthquake before.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
She goes, oh, honey, you don't have to worry about that. We haven't had one of those in years. And if we do, you don't even feel it. She's like, so we were chit chatting. It's a five half hour flight. So we were chit chatting. She's like, at the end of the flight, she's like, I'm going to give you my number just in case you need anything. Call me, blah, blah, blah. I get to LA. My apartment's not ready yet. It's Studio City.
Yeah.
And so my friend Chase, who's on the Mickey Mouse Club.
Right.
He had just, him and his girlfriend just got an apartment. They moved at the same time. He had no furniture. We're on the same, our cars are on the same truck from Orlando being delivered.
Oh my God.
It's the second night I'm there. My bags aren't unpacked. I'm sleeping in a sleeping bag. upstairs in his apartment. All he has is a couch.
Right.
Downstairs. And him and his girlfriend are sleeping on the couch. I wake up about 4:30-ish in the morning to ceiling fans hitting like back and forth and back and forth.
That's hitting the ceiling.
The ceiling. And I look across at the wall. He had a white wall and it looked like milk that was rippling. And then the whole building was bouncing, literally, like it felt like it was coming off the ground, right? I don't know that this is an earthquake at this time. It's like I just see things are happening. And then he had one of those staircases that went downstairs where it would like go half a flight, window with like a little
landing,
and then another half a flight. Well, as I'm like trying to get out of the sleeping bag and hopping to the stairs to run downstairs, screaming at the top of my lungs, through the window, I see explosions happening. So I think we're in war. I think we're at war. I think we're being attacked.
Right.
Because I've never been in an earthquake. I don't know what an earthquake is supposed to be.
What was happening outside?
The Transformers were blowing up from the earthquake. Shit. They were like exploding. So all you saw were these like flashes of explosions. So I'm running. And then I see, as I get to the bottom of the stairs, I see the couch with both of them in it screaming, sliding from one wall to the other, back and forth. Oh, and then the cabinets flipping, you know?
Yep.
And I'm like, it registered. I'm like, it's an earthquake. And I run, I'm in my underwear, by the way. I run outside.
Ass cracks. So many ass cracks.
A lot of hairy ass crack. I run outside and...
Which you're not supposed to do, well, FYI.
Never been in an earthquake. I run outside. The neighbors, because it's a duplex, the neighbors are outside. And I'm like, what's going on? They're like, we haven't had an earthquake like this in like 10, 15 years.
Yep.
I'm like, is this like every time there's an earthquake, this is what it's like? They're like,
no,
nothing like this. So I run and call my parents. Because I'm like, I got to call my parents. It's now 7:30 in the morning there. Yeah. I call my parents and I say, listen, turn on the news. I'm okay. But in case you can't get in touch with me, we just had a major earthquake, but I'm fine. Everything's fine. But if you can't get in touch with me, just so you know, I'm okay.
By the way, this is the Northridge earthquake.
Northridge earthquake.
Of 1994.
January 14th.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was January 14th, yeah.
Something around then.
It was either I flew in the 12th and it was the 14th, or I flew in the 14th and it was the 16th. It was Martin Luther King Day at the the date. So we're so stupid, right, that our cars are supposed to be delivered that day. Well, Chase had one car there because his girlfriend's car was the second car that was being delivered. So we're like, well, we got to go pick up our cars, which is like near downtown LA. So we're literally driving and everyone's like, get out of the street. What are you doing? And there's fires, looting happening. We're driving down Melrose. There's glass everywhere.
Oh,
and we're
shit.
And we're like, I think this is bad, guys. Like,
cars are going to be there.
The cars were there because they got there that morning. They got there the night before. Yeah.
Okay.
He spent the night at the hotel and was like, I'll be there. Blah,
oh,
blah.
I see. Okay.
But we didn't know we didn't realize how bad it was. Then we also realized that we had no groceries.
Right.
Because we've been eating out and we didn't expect.
Well, of course. Right.
Well,
yeah,
nothing
no
is opening. There's no restaurants open. The only restaurant that was open that we could find was in Toluca Lake across from Bob's Big Boy, that little hot dog stand.
Oh, right.
Right by the Falcon Theater.
Papu's.
Right by the Falcon Theater. And there was a line like down the street because there was nothing. So we literally just stocked up on burgers and hot dogs because we had no food.
Wait, can I tell you my story quick?
Not really.
Because I think so many of us remember that day so well. But
were you here?
Yes, I was. And I was actually right down the street from that hot dog stand. I was very close to your second place.
Oh, right.
And I was working on Step by Step, and my parents were in town. My dad was in town as well because he always came in over the weekend. It was a holiday weekend, as you said. So I remember we were in an apartment, which I probably shook more than a house, but I mean, I couldn't be sure. But apartment buildings were on the second or third floor, so it definitely, it was on rollers, so it definitely shook a lot. But I remember it shaking, and I thought my dad, because he would do this sometimes when he was being super annoying, he would come in the morning, and he would literally shake my bed and be like, get up, get up, get up. And he would shake my bed, shake my bed, shake my bed. So in my sleep, my eyes are closed, but I'm like awake. I was saying, stop it, Dad. Quit it. Stop. Get out of here. Quit it. I remember, I hear myself saying that. And then all of a sudden, a lamp crashes on the ground, and I wake up, and there's my dad at the end of the bed in the doorway, nowhere near my bed, saying, Christine, get up. It's an earthquake. And I'm like, huh? What? Like, I would have slept through the damn thing. So I go to my dad in the doorway, and I'm standing there with him, and I look across the living room hall in our apartment, and there's my mother on the other side in their bedroom doorway, and she goes, it's not gonna hold.
What?
The door jam. Because we were told to get under a door jam. It was the strongest point in the house.
Well, why does she say it's not gonna hold?
Because it was shaking so bad. It literally felt like the entire apartment was gonna come down on top of our head. She goes, get under the table. And I just remember the sound. The sound is what I remember the most. The sound sounded like a train going through your house. It was so loud. The water is sloshing. Things are opening. Cabinets are flipping. Glass is falling. It sounded like rumbling. Rumbling. So she goes, it's not going to hold. We dive under the dining room table, which, P.S., was like a rented table for some random. It wasn't even probably real wood. Like, that would have helped us. But anyway.
Mind you, just so you know, for out of perspective, this earthquake is like less than a minute.
Yeah, exactly. And feels like 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're under this table. We're all under this table. And by that time, it had finally started to stop. And we're all like, oh my God, we're alive. We're alive. We're alive. It was the first time I ever was like, we might die. I saw true panic and fear. True panic and fear in my parents' eyes. Like, everybody was scared.
I can never describe that feeling.
And then the aftershocks start 30 seconds after.
Oh, yeah. No.
So
For
the next 3 months, you're feeling aftershocks. And every time it comes, you're like, is this another one? Is this another big one? And then you get used to it finally. Things would kind of rattle and you're like, oh, it's another aftershock. Ha ha. All right, fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was Steven, like, and they were like five pointers. They weren't like little aftershocks.
No, they were big.
They were like big.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't really necessarily get the. Oh, wait, wrong mic.
There we go. That's the thing I don't really get the sense of, because I don't even think, because my dad lived in Pasadena at the time, and
yeah,
all I remember from it was just being shaken out of bed. Like, I was in bed, and then I woke up on the floor.
Shut up.
Everything in our, like, the lamps had collapsed and everything. But then I don't really remember much after that. So you're describing, like, the scene out in the street. And I don't know if my dad just, like, kept us inside for the rest of the weekend or...
Well, Sherman Oaks was on fire.
Yeah.
All of Ventura freeways Boulevard.
Freeways collapsed, the whole thing.
Yeah. No, that 10 freeway, there was a section of it where the RV was stuck in the middle of, like, the two pieces in between them totally collapsed. And there was... Yeah, it was.
There was. We weren't allowed to go back to Warner Brothers because, and I was supposed to like take final exams, and we were all supposed to go back to work and whatever. We weren't allowed to go back there because several of the studios had been condemned until further inspection. So we had to wear hard hats just to get on the lot, so I could retrieve my school books so that I could do my work. So that was like a whole trek. So yeah, we were off for like a whole week.
So my dad calls me back about that evening, and he's like, LAX is closed, but we have a flight out of San Diego, so you could come home.
He's like, come home. This isn't
gonna... get to San Diego, and then we have a flight waiting for you.
And is this making you think twice about things? Are you like, I shouldn't be here?
Had I been here for 2 or 3 weeks, you wouldn't know me today. Like, I would have gone
home.
But because it was my second night, my bags were unpacked. I didn't really know...
You weren't even in your apartment.
I wasn't in my own place. I didn't know... Like, had I known that this was going to continue, I would have been like, goodbye. Albert Fields, who we interviewed here, was living in Toluca Lake. His chimney fell into the house. And that was the last time I saw him until he moved back recently. he left. He left the business. He's like, I'm not doing this. But he had been here.
Yeah.
I totally would have reacted the same way. But I was so like, you know what? If I made it through this, I'm going to be fine. You know, I just wanted to experience it. Plus, by the way, I hated LA my first like 9 months. I couldn't stand it. I hated the people here. So I went back to New York to go find another apartment. But I went back during the summer, and then I remembered why I moved.
Oh, really?
And I was like, okay, I'm going to give it another chance.
Because my allergies are terrible. It's hot as shit.
Yeah.
I have swamp butt.
Right. So then I moved. I start taking classes and the whole bit. And,
right.
Get an agent, start working. And then I would do like shows here and there or a commercial, you know, whatever, nothing big. And my agents were like, listen, and this is way before 9/11.
Right.
My agents are like, listen, if I were just to look at you, I wouldn't know what you're, where you're from. Not that it matters, but you're getting, your name is pinholing you as very ethnic.
Right.
And
because you could play, I mean, you could be Greek.
I could be Greek. I could be Jewish.
Italian.
I could be Italian. I could be whatever.
Yeah.
So they're like, you should think about changing your name. And I was like, I don't know if my parents are going to, my parents will freak out if I tell them I'm changing my name. So I say, okay, let me think about it. So they're like, we feel like you can get a lot more auditions and work more if you just change your name.
Yeah, because like here's the thing that a lot of people don't know about this business. When you're submitted for a role as an actor, right, your agent is sending out your picture. And at that time, it was by submission, like by the mail, or their people were dropping headshots off. So someone sees your picture and they see your name and they look at maybe your resume and they decide whether they put you in a pile, whether you're right for a role or not.
Right.
Then they'll call after and say, hey, did you see my client? I left a submission, you know, for a lot. And they'll, yeah, no, he's not right.
Right.
We're looking for an Italian guy.
Right.
By name alone, sometimes that will already pigeonhole you into a certain category.
Because most people in that part of the industry, the casting, whatever, their imaginations aren't that great.
They have a lot to do, and they're also just trying to get the job done quickly.
Right. So,
you have to kind of like present them with a more universal.
Right.
Like it's like, oh, I mean, years ago, if you had a very ethnic quote-unquote last name, people would tell you to shorten it or change it. And there's a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of Hollywood stars now where they're, I mean, Rachel Zoe,
right,
not a real last name, everyone.
No,
the stylist we're talking about.
So I smartly, I always had, I never had my name printed on the front of my picture.
Okay.
I only had it on the resume that's stapled to it.
Right.
So I'm in the office one day in my agent's office, and I said, you know what, all right, fine, let's just, and I had an audition. I said, no, I didn't have enough. I said, let's just, okay, change it. And they're like, well, what do you want your name to be? I was like, I don't know. And I was like, I don't know. Alec Led. Make it Alec Led. I'll be Alec Led. They're like, okay, but I go, but I want it to be a little different. I want it to have double D's.
Oh.
They're like, what? And I go, Alec Led. A-L-E-C-L-E-D. Alec Led. Alec Led. They're like, okay, it is. I get an audition that next day for Zoe Duncan, Jack and Jane on the whatever. It was
CW.
The WB at the time.
Oh, okay.
And I book it. But I'm registered under SAG as Ala Khaled.
Right.
Because I've already, you know, I'm already there as Ala. So I have to now call SAG, change my name to Alec Led, and that's how he became him. So half my friends here who know me personally know me as Allah. And then the other half, after that day, have all known me as Alec.
It's so weird.
Did you ever think that, like, when you were changing it, did you think that this was something that was going to have to stick for a while?
Oh, yeah. I was like, I'm working now. Like, I'm working now as Alec Led. And so you have to understand, also, these casting directors go on to other casting jobs. They don't just cast one show. So if they like you, they bring you on to other projects.
Right.
And I would get a lot. I was I was like the king of the co-stars. Like I would go in, nail those mm-hmm. co-stars, which is the hardest thing to do because there's such little roles.
Yeah.
And I would just nail them and nail them and nail them. And I was booking like huge commercial campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And I was making a lot of money just doing commercials and doing like maybe three or four episodics during episodic season,
right.
whatever. So this is like in 90, I think I want to say it was like 95 or 6 when I changed it.
Mm-hmm.
In 99, I had been working consistently. I had my first year in LA, I worked at the clothing store Signal, which right. was part of that whole Merry-Go-Round thing. When I booked my first commercial, I quit that job and I didn't have a real job, like a regular real job since.
Yeah.
Because I was just working as an actor. It was great. And that's when commercials, you made money.
Right. That's when you made a lot of money.
A lot of money. So 1999 happens. No, it's 1999. I get an audition through my commercial agents. And they go, hey, do you have theatrical representation? I was like, yeah. They're like, oh, okay, well, we got this audition for you, but it's a theatrical thing. Can we just pass it? Can you pass it along to your theater agents?
Right.
Because I was with a totally different company for commercials. I said, sure. So I called my theatrical agents, and I said, there's this movie of the week. I guess the casting director ran across my picture, and he wants me to come in. Can you follow up on it? They're mm-hmm. like, sure. And it was this movie of the week called Maybe Marcia. So they go, oh, yeah, we've seen this in the breakdowns, but there's not a lot of information on it. And, I mean, do you want us to follow up? Because it's not, I don't know if it's like that going to be that big of a deal. They're like, I'm like, well, yeah.
I mean, it's a Mao.
It's a Mao. It's a movie of the week. Yeah, I want to go in on it. So I continue to work from that and do more commercials, lots of commercials and television. My brother and my parents at this point had moved back to New Orleans.
Okay.
Sort of starting over.
Because the stores...
Because they lost everything.
They lost everything in that.
With the IRS thing and the home invasion. My brother's miserable. He's working in a record store. He's learning the industry. He's mm-hmm. now like DJing contests and all that.
And how old is he at this point? Like 18, 19?
So he's probably 20 at this
okay.
point. He decides to move to South Florida, but he has no car. So he's like begging for like my uncles to help buy a car. So he buys like this Honda Civic and just drives to fucking Florida and sort of starts over. Now we sort of like lost communication, not because but it was like two separate worlds.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm on the West Coast. He's on the East Coast. So time difference.
Yeah,
he's younger. He's sleeping in until 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I'm up at whatever. See him during the holidays or whatever. No big deal.
Yeah.
Don't think anything of it. I know that he's starting to work as a DJ, like get like gigs and stuff, but mm-hmm. He's a complete unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts working at a radio station in Miami and starts the hip hop radio station in Miami. And
what do you remember what the station was?
I want to say it was 97.1 FM or something like that.
And mm-hmm.
it was the first hip hop station in Miami.
But he collaborated with Fat Joe in the beginning, correct?
Well, Fat Joe took him under his wing.
Got it.
But what it is that like when it comes to radio DJs, and this is an allegedly,
mm-hmm.
what happens is that at that time they were still playing CDs and you know records. It's not like you know now you listen to radio stations. They're like, there's hardly any DJs. They're mostly computer like generated.
Playlists.
So in order for like hip hop artists to get into major markets like Miami or New York,
mm-hmm.
or they would pay off the DJ.
Well, that's been happening. Payola, that's been happening forever.
Right, but it's a legend.
Okay. Have you ever seen Jersey Boys? Okay. Anyway, continue. Go on.
Say it again.
Payola has been happening forever.
Yeah. That's allegedly.
It's not alleged. It's in the musical Jersey Boys.
Well, with,
everything that's
with
real
my
happens
brother,
in musicals.
It's alleged.
Okay, fine, whatever. Go on.
So he got to meet a lot of big names in the business.
Sure, because he was the gatekeeper to their music, correct?
Allegedly.
whatever. He was, yeah, he was working with them and he was meeting them.
But he was also very talented and was making beats and selling beats. And,
right.
Because at that time they sold a lot of beats. I don't know how you sell a beat. The only beat I know gives me red poop.
Oh, God. And then you're like, do I have a kidney infection? Yeah. Oh, no, I ate beets last night. I'm good.
Well, here's the deal, though. You have to know this. I think my brother is on this last album that was released on June 23rd with my nephew executive producing it at 8 months old.
Right.
Correct. I think it's his seventh album.
And see, I think a lot of people who are just finding him now don't realize that.
No, and there's a great interview that I saw on
that how long he's been doing this.
He's been doing, and what's great about him is like he's grateful the fact that it sort of happened at this time because he's evolved as an artist,
sure,
and in the business. So what he's doing now, he's always collaborated with hip hop stars. He's very much like me personality wise mm-hmm. when it comes to like say Worst Ever. Mm-hmm. I make people do the show. I'm like, mm-hmm. you're gonna do it, calm yeah. down. Khaled is the same thing with the music business.
Yeah.
He's like, Rihanna, you're gonna do my single, let's make it happen, blah blah blah.
Like it's gonna be fun. I promise you're gonna like this experience.
But now he doesn't have to do that, but like yeah. back in the day he's like, you know.
Right. He's pushy.
Yes.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Because you get people out of your comfort zone.
And he's
but then
not
they
greedy
like
either. So yeah. he's, you know, he makes yeah. hits. So this album, like for instance, like, and everything's strategic. Like the baby was born on the 23rd. There's 23 anthems on this album.
Mm-hmm.
It was released on June 23rd. And mm-hmm. I'd like to say my birthday is September 23rd.
A lot of 23s, numerology speaking, in that yeah. family. Jeez. Yeah. Okay.
I went to Miami, and I was going for Fashion Week in Miami with my friend, and we were staying at the Shore Club. And I called him, and I said, and he was with a different, this had to be like 16 years ago, 16, 17 years ago.
Wow.
Or maybe 18 years ago. And I remember calling and going, I need to borrow your car while I'm in Miami, because he had like a couple cars, and I didn't really... He's like, oh, no problem. I'll have it delivered to the hotel.
Uh-huh.
And he delivered a Range Rover to the hotel.
And you're like, this is a little different than that Honda Civic.
And then he
had
bought his first house in Hollywood, Florida. So my mom was coming down because I was coming to Miami. So my mom was coming down to visit mm-hmm. at the same time so she could see both of us. I was staying at the hotel. I just would drive the car and meet, you know. So I went to his house and I was like, it's in a gated community on the golf course. And I'm like going, he bought the house? And I was like, wow, okay, he must be doing really well. The night before, we went to Nobu in Miami, and he met us there for dinner. And then he like pulled out cash. And it's like, it was like six of us. And he like paid for the dinner. I'm like going, what's happening right now? But I didn't know. I was like, I didn't realize, because I'd been so out of yeah. touch with like his career.
Right.
Because we'd only see each other on, you know, Khaled's always been showy and like it's always about the money
right.
for Khaled. Not in a bad way, but that's just that's what he thinks about.
Right.
Whereas I'm like, if I can like pay my rent, pay my bills, maybe vacation once or twice a year and eat out every mm-hmm. once in a while, I'm pretty good.
Otherwise, you know, I'll get my lunch at Christine's house.
Several times a week. So I like a light lunch.
Lean Back was 2004, by the way.
2004, Lean Back. Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize how well he was doing. Yeah. I just thought he was an on-air DJ. I didn't get the producing yeah. part of it. I knew he had a studio. I knew he was in that world, whatever. But he wasn't popular on the West Coast.
Right.
No one knew who the hell he was on the West right. Coast. So I wasn't exposed to it. Like, if I was to stay in Florida or New York, I would know him.
Of course.
So I was like, okay, this guy's doing really well. You know, he's doing a lot better than I thought.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm still a struggling actor, even though I'm doing pretty good.
You're still struggling from the job to job.
From job yeah. to job. Even yeah. though some jobs, like that Visa commercial that won right. the Emmy... I made a shit ton of money on it.
Sure.
But
that's the thing in our business. It's like, but I guess in any business.
It's the waves.
Yeah, it's the waves. But I mean, with ASCAP, it's a little different. You have a hit song, man. That thing will be continued to be licensed over and over and over.
I know. I always thought, I was like, you know what I should do is I should talk them into let me just do like one little vocal on the one of the singles.
You really should.
Because then I'd get royalties.
Oh, man, you'd be set. At least for, I mean, you'd have a base of something for a long time. Somebody told me today, I was at a meeting today, and this woman says to me, I wrote blah, blah, blah for this show. It's a tiny little tidbit of a song, right, that was on the series that I was that I did, Step by Step, a long time ago. She's like, do you realize I still get residuals, like $1,000 a year? I mean, it's not a lot, but like $1,000 a year I get still for writing that song in like 1994.
Right, so it's over 20 years old.
She's like, SAG is one thing, WGA is one thing. ASCAP is where it's at. If you can write any kind of song and put it in a movie or put it in a TV show, that thing will get licensed for the rest of your life. Okay, so give us a little update before we end here on your brother. So what's the newest with him?
So his album released June 23rd. Mm-hmm. I think he's in like four movies coming out this year.
Oh my God. He's doing Plants. He's got the Plant Milk. He does Milk. Plants.
I don't know if you saw the New York Times article.
No.
Of him in Miami in his house, and you should look at that up. I think he's in, what's that movie with the singers? The one with the Australian girl, they're like
Pitch Perfect 3.
Pitch Perfect 3.
Oh, Pitch Perfect.
Yes,
okay,
he's
got
in Pitch
it.
Perfect 3. What mm-hmm. else is he doing, Steven? You know better.
I think, he might have just been in a commercial, but he was in a Spider-Man Homecoming commercial. Yeah. I don't know if he's in the movie.
I think
movie
that was
itself.
For the NBA.
Yeah, the NBA thing. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a new Jordans that.
Oh, he's doing some Jordans?
He's got Jordans.
Any chance we can get some of those Jordans?
I'm not really going to even ask.
Okay. All right.
And then,
okay.
I think he's like in four different, he's out, you know, he's got the new hit song with Rihanna.
And Beyonce. He's got a song with Beyonce and Jay-Z. Do you think there's any chance we can get him on the podcast?
I'll think about it. I don't know how, it might be a tumultuous podcast.
I love tumultuous. I love Harry, and I love tumultuous.
Yeah. He's got his book, Major Keys.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions me in there somewhere.
Have you read it?
I haven't. I have a copy, but I haven't read it.
Are you nervous to read it?
No, because he can't. I'd destroy him if he said anything bad about me.
I'm sure
no,
he
would never. He loves
you.
Me. I love him. That's that.
Well, good. Wow. That's crazy. But his brother is Alec Led, a.k.a.
Alec Led.
Ala Khaled, a.k.a. at Alec Led.
Yeah.
And I'm Christine Lakin at Yo Lakin. And Steven is...
At Steven Ray Morris.
And is also starting the bids for Ala's frozen popsicle sperm.
Does Georgia have a Twitter?
Hell no.
Because my nephew, Assad...
No, I know. He's fucking famous, but...
100,000 Instagram followers. Or 800,000.
That makes me nuts.
I think it's more than that.
Oh, it's more than that now?
I'm sure. He's way more famous.
I think it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, he's way more famous than I even
I don't know if you saw... I think it was Variety... Variety that wrote that the number one Instagram to follow is my nephew.
Yes. Yeah. That makes me scared and crazy.
Yeah,
I put my child on social.
I was at Toys R Us with him, and I was holding him, and this couple came up to me and was like, can you take a picture of us? And I go, sure. And I go, give me your phone. They're like, okay. And I go, okay,
us and the kid.
With Assad. I go, with my nephew? And they're like, yeah, can we have our kid with your nephew? And I go, you know who he is? They're like, yeah. I was like, this is not good. That's not good.
Sorry, he's got 1.1 million Instagram followers.
Yeah, my nephew.
I mean, if only.
And he's only following 54 people, so.
And I'm not one of them, I'm sure.
She doesn't like any of that. She's very upset about her own Instagram following. Oh,
he's 8 months old, so maybe she could, she wants to like be a gold digger. She could
really get in there. I mean, he is a younger man. We'll see what happens.
Well, not only that, but he's an executive producer of his first album already, which is a hit.
Which is like the best idea for a trust fund ever. Yeah. Just make him an executive producer. Yeah. All right. Anyway, thanks for letting me grill you. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
WorstEverPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You can find me on social at Yo Lakin, and you can find Ala Khaled at Alec Led, ALECLEDD.
Bye.
We won't even get into that next time. Goodbye. Bye.